But I've never seen you go to a toilet paper conference or a medical conference.
No, but I mean, of course, but I mean...
Are there toilet the paper conferences? I don't actually know whether that's a thing.
I'm sure there are. Welcome to Bad Voltage. It's great to have you here. I'm here with my compadres, Stuart Ian Langridge and Jeremy Mugabe Garcia.
Look at the wheels were turning. Nothing was going on.
I'll be honest with you.
Brutal.
That was brutal. The definition of late planning.
It was.
That
I was
trying really
to think
was.
Of an amusing.
turns out just in time Jeremy comment. Not that funny.
Not that funny, yeah. I don't know where Mugabe came from. Jeez, okay.
That's a little insight into your mind. No one wants further information.
No one wants further information.
But nonetheless, welcome to Bad Voltage.
Yes, it's great to have you here. We're actually going to talk about one thing today. We're not going to do the news. We're just going to have one meaty segment, and we're going to talk about conferences. All three of us, and I'm sure many of you listening to this, have been treading the boards at conferences for many, many years. You know, tech conferences, other conferences, all over the world, different sizes, different shapes, different focus. But the question is, what goes into a good conference? And that's kind of what we want to get into today, because let's be honest, there's been many shitty conferences that have happened over the years. And we were just talking about this before we started recording, that we don't really want to turn this into a name and shame kind of situation, because, you know, sometimes a conference doesn't do a good job and they put the best possible effort in, or conferences have bad years and then they improve. So
Sure. We're
going to use some examples of some good stuff, but we're going to stay away from naming and shaming. But we'll give you, I'm sure, plenty of examples of stuff that isn't good. So why don't we start out with, like, what are your favorite conferences like that you've been to? Like, what are the ones that you enjoy and why?
Stuart, you want to lead off or you want me to grab it?
Okay. So, favourite conferences. I tend to, in general, like smaller, more focused conferences. If I'm there to learn and see people. That's that glue that you had at school, isn't it?
No, it's a very, very large conference in Las Vegas. Yeah. This is the opposite of it is the actual antithesis of what you like.
Oh, right. So this is like,
and not
CES
that it's a bad conference. Just when you think small conference, the opposite
it's
of what you think is CONEX.
Right. Okay. No, not that kind of thing.
Then, and it's also not a glue that I grew up with. Anyway, carry on.
The only really large conference that I've been to that I thought was cool was Scale. Most of the others I've been to, so CES or MWC or something like that, Linux World back in the old days, just do my head in. They're just too big. I mean, obviously, some of those, CES is an expo thing. It's not a go and watch talks conference. It's a big exhibition. But nonetheless, I prefer something where we're going to go. If you're going to go and watch talks, it's often a one room thing with a selection of talks throughout the day, and then that's it. Something like Scale, it's quite hard to keep track of the tracks, in fact, because there are, you know, 25 of them or whatever. But for something like that, that's a more social thing. So I like things like EdgeConf has been really cool, for example.
From your perspective, FFConf here
in the UK, things like that.
It sounds like you're saying, like, the content and the structure of the talks is important to you, right?
Yes.
Because everyone has different views about this. Like, speaking personally, I very rarely actually go to conference talk sessions. I'm more interested in the hallway track and just meeting people. So conferences like CES are outrageously large, and you can never possibly meet a bunch of people there. You meet 1% of that general audience. And that's why conferences like Scale are much easier. But like I said, I don't know whether I'm weird in this regard.
Yeah, purely from my point of view, if you're not going to watch the talks and learn things, then and you're going to basically to attend the hallway track, there are two reasons for that. Either you're going to shill your business in some way, or it's a jolly. You're going there to...
That is not true.
Hang on.
Okay, you're there, carry on.
You're there to catch up with people who are friends of yours or you haven't seen for a while or you'd like to do something, or you're there for business reasons. And I, in general, don't pick up a lot of business from conferences. And much as I very much like going to them as a jolly, it's a hell of a lot of money. especially if I'm going to the States. So, sure. Normally, if I'm going to a conference, honestly, normally if I'm going to a conference, it's because I'm speaking at it. If I'm going to a conference, I'm at least partially there to watch the talks and learn things if I'm not actually speaking myself. And the hallway track, because I'm basically hopeless at going around and convincing people to give me work, I don't get a lot of use out of conferences for that. So I'm there to hang out with people, which is great. Sure. It's just a pretty big expenditure of time and money in order to essentially go to the pub with people I like, which I can do every Friday anyway.
So I think it's interesting, and it kind of just dawned on me that we probably should have had one guest on this show, because while all three of our perspectives are quite a bit differently, all three of us speak at conferences with some amount of regularity, and I think our conference participation maybe is a little atypical from what the average attendee is like. It would have been nice to have one person on. So, and this would be great for some feedback on the forums, that is purely an attendee and has the perspective of someone who doesn't speak, doesn't sponsor, doesn't attend, as someone who's worked at a company that has something to do with the conference, or, you know, in many of our cases has put conferences on, but just as a straight attendee, because I think their perspective would have added a little bit and would be somewhat too substantially different than ours.
That is a good point, which we did not think of.
No.
Yes.
But, Jono, you disagreed with my characterization of the hallway track as either business or jolly. What's your third way, then? What are you doing that isn't either of those two things?
Well, I think for me personally, and obviously everybody's different, The reason why I don't go to many conference sessions is because, and it's not that I think I've got all the answers that I don't need to learn. Quite the opposite. I've got lots to learn. It's that the main reason why I want to go to conferences is to build relationships and to foster relationships. If I'm sat there in a conference room watching someone speak, I'm not in the process of building and fostering relationships. And my goal for fostering relationships is really nothing to do with, frankly, my business. Right, I don't go to conferences to get business. I mean, businesses often come out of conferences. For me, my overall approach has always been, you know, get to know interesting people, and then the business will naturally pan out of that. I think if you go to a conference for the purpose of getting business, it comes across as desperate and weird.
I agree with that, right? But I disagree with your argument, and I refute it thus. You could go and meet interesting people at any conference. Doesn't have to be a tech conference at all. But I've never seen you go to a toilet paper conference or a medical conference.
No, but I mean, of course. But I mean,
are there toilet paper conferences? I don't actually know whether that's a thing.
I'm sure there are.
I don't know why I thought
paper
that.
Con,
as an
I hear
example.
Is a great time.
So
TP Con.
TP Con. I mean, but the reason why I tend to go to tech conferences is because what I'm interested in, right? I'm not particularly interested in toilet paper conferences. So for me, it's what I find really enjoyable. And I admit that an element of this is because I work for myself, and it's the same with you, Ak. I spend a lot of my time in my office by myself, working by myself. So going to conferences is, there's no doubt that there's an element of a jolly. It's not necessarily going out and getting smashed every night.
Yeah.
But there's an element of kind of going out and, you know, sitting around and having coffee people and getting to know people. But I'm more interested in those conversations than necessarily sitting and watching a lecture. Now, there are exceptions to this. If there's someone who's speaking on a topic that I'm particularly interested in or that's very relevant, I'll go to it. But I don't think it's just about, in fact, I would suggest to anybody, don't go to conferences just to get business.
No, don't do that at all. Like you say, that looks desperate.
The, It looks desperate. It does, but the crux is always...
I'm curious of in your opinion on this, Jono, because, Stuart, you've already said yours. When I was also doing a consultancy similar to both of you are now, I got a fair amount of work out of going to conferences, be it people that came up to me after speaking and said, hey, that what you said resonated with me. How could I hire you? See that you're, you know, offer yeah. those services, or in just networking at events or in the hallway track or what it may be. So I'm interested, Stuart, you said you didn't. I definitely found that I did. Jono, what's your experience there?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get business out of conferences.
But more accidentally, not me going there to get business, yeah. but as a result of having attended.
It may just be that I'm rubbish and people don't come up to me as much afterwards. This is entirely a possibility here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just, like, I mean, and there's no doubt that a conference is a formula, it's a forming of people, right? So if you get to express your ideas or what you do to that group of people, then it opens up the possibility that people are going to be interested in doing business with you. There's no doubt about that. I don't think it's quite so cynical as people hanging out in the network track is just the hallway track is just network, just jollies and.
Well, I mean,
you know, and shilling, you know.
I think what we've described, I'm describing it as either one or the other is not fair, but it is kind of both at once.
No, it isn't. It isn't. If I go to a conference and I'm hanging out in the hallway track because I want to talk to interesting people and get to know interesting people, and I'm absolutely... The goal of this is nothing to do with business. Without sounding like a dick, my pipeline is generally reasonably full, so I don't need to go and look for business, right? And other people are going to fall into that category, right? Stop laughing, Langridge. But it's true. Like, I generally don't need to go. I don't need to go and shill for business. So therefore, my priority is just getting to know interesting people and having interesting conversations. In fact, I can't stand people who only want to have conversations and get to know people purely for business reasons.
Yeah,
it's inauthentic. Unless the stipulated goal is, I'd like to have a conversation with you about doing business with you. Of course, that's perfectly fine.
I'm not disagreeing with you in the slightest on that. My point is that if you didn't have the business, you wouldn't be doing it as much.
Yeah, I did it when I did it before I had the business. I've been doing it ever since I've been going to conferences. Like, I guarantee you, anyone who's listening to this, who's seen me at a conference, 95% of the time, you're going to find me either in the hallway track or at the social events. Those are the two places where I hang out. People very rarely will see me in the conference sessions or the keynote sessions. I was doing that when I was at Canonical. I was doing that when I was at Open Advantage.
I agree with that entirely, but to me, that's a jolly. You're doing it because you enjoy it, which I don't have a problem with at all. But, you know, fine.
How is that a jolly? I mean, frankly, it is a jolly in a way because I enjoy my job. So therefore, everything's a jolly. With the exception of billing and filling in tax returns and shit like that.
Oh, shut up about tax return. Oh my God, it's nearly the end of July. Be quiet. I must check that. I mean, we're arguing over semantics. So, doesn't matter. But so, Jono, you and I both talked about this. Jeremy, what's your thoughts on what sorts of conferences do you like? Which ones do you go to and why?
Yeah, I was going to say you cut out at the worst possible time there because I could tell you were asking a question and I have no idea what you asked. Although I'm glad it was you. It's just you cut out for Jono as well.
So what sorts of conferences do you particularly like and why?
So I'm a little bit all over the map, I think, and I attend different conferences, but different types of conferences for different reasons. And I think I also enjoy the smaller, very focused events, you know, maybe 100 to 300 people that are very hyper-specific to a topic, because I think those type of events tend to get people that are very passionate about that thing, and you end up learning about that thing. And if that topic is something that interests you, obviously that's very compelling. I like community-run conferences that are a little bit bigger, all things open and scale come to mind, where there's just a lot of people there that I maybe only see once or twice a year, and it's at that event. And so one reason to go is the community aspect of it, where you're seeing those people. And then I also like events that are larger or maybe a little bit more corporate, but that are focused on a topic that matters to me in a work context. So something like Open Source Summit, there's nowhere else for me to get access to that many open source programs, office leaders in one place. So every year when I go to that event, I take something out of it, both from a personal perspective as far as people that I've met that will be good to know for a variety of reasons in the future, and also actionable items that I can apply in open source programs offices that, you know, I help, like Datadog. So I think those are the three different types of events broadly that I like. And then events like FOSDEM I think are great too, where it's giant, it's a little chaotic, but there's a passion and energy there that are very difficult to replicate, and I enjoy those as well. So yeah, I'm kind of a little bit more varied, it sounds like.
Yeah, wow. Never saw a conference you didn't like. That's pretty cool. Or never saw a conference type you didn't like. Might be a better way of putting it.
I mean, the super large ones, I agree, are a little bit of a challenge. I don't know if you've ever been to a 50 or 60 or 70,000 person event. The ones that I have been to are, it's just logistically a challenge from a conference venue perspective. That means they're super, either super spread out or in a massive place where it can be a little bit difficult
CES,
to find things.
CES, so. MWC, things like that. Right. Been to both. Nightmare. Not doing it again.
Yeah, I don't like those conferences that are too big. I think the only thing, I think those conferences are okay if you're there for some other reason. So I'll give you an example. I was at CES. The last time I was at CES, I was working with a client of mine, and they were doing like a whole bunch of press work there. So being in an environment with all of these people knocking around was fine. But frankly, it was like being in San Francisco and going to a meeting. It was just a bunch of... Yeah.
You like, happened to be having a meeting and CES was kind of next door, almost.
Yeah, and you're paying $12 for a coffee. And
the whole thing of spending 3 days living on pastries from Starbucks is not...
One question I have for both of you is, I think that there is a spectrum of conferences that go from being productive and like serious, meaningful, you know, you come out of it and you think, I got a lot accomplished, I got a lot done, and then fun, right? And it's not to say that you can't have fun and be productive. And that to me is the perfect combination of any kind of conference.
Almost by definition, if it's a spectrum, there's something in the middle. That's what a spectrum is.
Fuck off. A spectrum is a small computer with rubber keys. Okay. So where do you place the importance of fun here? Because this gets back to the point you were making, Ak, about jollies. Because I'll be honest with you, a conference that is fun, I'm always more naturally inclined to go to.
Community run things. Lug Radio Live, things like Fossil Live and Old Camp here in the UK and that sort of thing. They are essentially put on for fun. Yes, people are doing talks and you're learning stuff and so on, but I don't think most of the people there are going purely with the intention of taking lots of notes and then going home at the end of the day and going, I have learned a lot and that was what I went for. It's at least partially about the social aspect. I think the distinction is that the social aspect is built into the concept of the conference rather than a thing that people do while they're at the conference, if you see what I mean. And large conferences tend to try and fake this by having organised parties and things like that, and it's just not the same thing.
Well,
they can be fun as well, but they are different.
It's different. Well, there's a scale issue there as well, right?
That's harsh to scale.
not the conference scale.
This is definitely the dad joke edition of Bad Voltage.
I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah, it really is. If you've got a conference like when we did Lug Radio Live, or you've got something like Fostock Live, or like these smaller events where you have like either you could, less than 200 people.
You could say, we're having an after party and we've just hired a local place. Everyone go there, which doesn't work if there are 4,000 people in the building. I got you entirely.
But the other thing as well that's unique about those examples is they are inherently British. So, like, if you've got an audience that is more of an international audience, like, I think it can be a little bit more difficult to, like, Lug Radio Live and Fast Talk Live are just, it's basically a big chunk of it's going down the pub and hanging out, which is a distinctly British cultural
phenomenon. Yeah, but the thing that you do afterwards doesn't necessarily have to be in a pub. I mean, I tend to lean towards things where the after event is just everyone hangs out in a bar and has a few drinks because I like that kind of thing.
Right.
But first of all, I've seen a bunch of people saying, you know, I don't particularly like that. And it would be nice if there were after events that weren't that. But secondly, there are conferences which do other things and they're fine too, you know.
But what I mean, less is so much the pub piece, just more there is it's a small, intimate group of people who, many of which know each other, and therefore blowing off steam is more in line with generally what that group wants to do, right? But I think if you have, let's say, something like Scale in the US, which is a couple of thousand people, a lot of people who go to Scale know each other. It's very much a community-run conference, but It's a much broader, more diverse community, I would argue. Like, some people like to go and do something, an activity in the evening. Some people do like to just go down the pub and talk. So I think smaller makes that, I think, a lot easier.
I'd agree with that.
If that makes sense. You know, but I don't know. So, yeah, I think fun is an important element. And sadly, a lot of business conferences can miss out on this. Like, sometimes even the social events are just like, this isn't fun.
Well, this is what I'm saying about attempting to, if the social community aspect isn't an inherent part of the conference because it's basically a conference for a community, then attempting to copy the way those conferences work and set up a fun will be mandatory evening event tends not to work very well, in my experience, at least. But
what do you guys think about these kinds of, like, structured evening events, like where you have activities and games and stuff like that? Because some people really do benefit and enjoy an activity of some form.
So I'm going to go on a limb here and say that while none of the three of us probably that's their favorite thing, it's because in any conference... Not in any conference. In the vast majority of conferences that we go to, we know a lot of people.
Yeah.
For most people, if you don't know a lot of people, that unstructured time, it could be, you know, really more of a nerve-wracking event than fun.
Yeah.
Because especially if you're a little bit introverted, going into a room with 300 people that you don't know any of and just striking up a conversation is really, really difficult for most people.
Just about to say exactly that. Yeah. I
think those structured events, what it does is for those people, it gives them a excuse to get in the game, if you will, and participate in a way that's comfortable for them that maybe doesn't apply to us, once again, as much as I think the average attendee.
Yeah, because we're extroverted and we do know people. So what happens is, well, you know, someone will say, a bunch of us are going to this place.
Yes.
Come along, no problem. But if you're sat there in your chair in the conference venue and a bunch of other people all peel off in groups and then you're still sat there when the room's empty, that's quite soul-destroying. So having organised stuff to happen is really, really, really important for that.
Yes. Yeah.
This is going to sound weird, and I don't think you guys are going to believe me when I say this, but I personally... I'm not an extrovert in those kinds of situations. I actually find it, if I'm at a conference that I don't know anyone at, I find it very difficult to go up and strike up conversations with people. Because I feel like, you know, I'm kind of butting in. Like, you don't want to be that person who's butting in and an unwelcome addition to a conversation.
Yeah.
And of course, most people are completely cool. Like, if you go up and say, hey, I'm Jono, nice to meet you, most people are going to be fine because you're in an environment that is supposed to support that. And anyone who doesn't do that, frankly, is a bit of a dick. But I find it very difficult to do that.
I also don't
like structured... I'm not a big fan, personally, of, like, any kind of team-building style activity in that regard, in an evening.
Providing a venue and things to do. So Scale does this quite well when they have the games evening or whatever. Much as I myself, I'm not particularly huge fan of going, oh, great, I could walk across some Lego or something like that. The fact that that's going on means that...
and yet there's a picture of all three of us doing something.
Yeah, we all did it. but that's the point. It's you're not lining people up and making them go through a specific activity with instructions. You're just providing a venue in which communication can happen and stuff to do, so that's not just an empty room where all you can do is strike up conversations with people.
I think
that's a good idea. You know, so you can walk around and talk to the random person standing next to you about this ancient Commodore 16 that you see on the table in front of you as part of an exhibit or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's less about, it seems like it's less about participating in the activity and having a focal point where you can strike up a conversation, right?
Yeah.
So you can say it's a Commodore 64, or you can laugh at Jeremy walking on the Lego, or whatever it might be.
You're not providing actual activities for people to do. You're providing a room full of conversation pieces, conversation starters.
So that
the conversation starter is not you, you know, heart pounding, walking up to someone you've never seen before and going, "Hi, I'm Stuart. I'd like to get to know you." At which point you either look earnest or a bellend. Neither of which you get.
Can we be friends?
Yeah, precisely, right? That is,
I'm a great friend.
That's the worst. I hate doing that and I'm really bad at it.
I don't enjoy it at all. Erica is great at this. She'll just walk into a conversation and it's like, "Hey, how's it going?" And I feel just bizarre about it. And the problem is a lot of people who I know think that I'm fine with doing that. But like this to me is for people who don't do much speaking, who are listening to this, this is when if you speak at a conference, it completely changes the game. Because I think if you go and do a talk, invariably somebody may come up and say, "Hey, I caught your presentation today."
Yes.
And then it will be a conversation starter.
Very much agree.
And if anybody does a keynote or like a lightning talk to a broader audience, whatever, it makes that even easier because there's more people who've seen you, so therefore they will often strike up the conversation. Like I've done this a ton of times where if I end up chatting to somebody who's done a keynote at a conference, it's like, "Ah, I saw your talk today, great work." And then you're off to the races.
Yeah, that helps. That's a conversation starter. But pretty much by definition, almost everyone who's at a conference isn't a speaker. Otherwise the economics of it don't work. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. So what else goes into this?
I thought about some structure here. There are a few things which I imagine we would agree are obvious things that need to go into a good conference. Like you need to pick good, entertaining, knowledgeable speakers, and the AV needs to be all right, and you need to keep to the schedule and things like that. So ignoring those, I'm interested in smaller things that you think make a conference good and smaller things that you think make a conference bad. So you don't need to name in the bad thing having a bunch of really boring speakers. We'll take that one as read, okay? But I'm interested in smaller tips, little details that you think, "Oh, that's really handy when they do that," or "That's actually a really bad sign when they do that."
So we just did DASH last week in New York, which is a conference that Datadog puts on, target about 1,500 people just for a gauge of size. And the one thing that we do a little bit differently than most conferences that has gotten really good response that I wouldn't have thought people cared about as much is a slightly elevated level of food where it's not just standard, but it's quite nice. People appreciated more than I initially anticipated they would. And so speaking personally as someone who really enjoys eating, I enjoy it, but I didn't think the average conference goer would enjoy it as much as they did. Obviously not a reason that someone would go back to a conference in a vacuum, because I think that what people really are looking for are the major things like content and networking opportunities and things like that. But that's one small detail that I think, if done well, is kind of a little bit of a differentiator.
I agree with that completely. I mean, you know, we talk when we're doing software development about the user experience and how you want to try and delight people. And this is a perfect example of it. Make sure that there's enough drinks around, so you're not hunting around going, "I'm quite thirsty in this room." You know, have nicer food than just, you know, from the Subway round the corner. Just that little bit that maybe we'll go, "Oh, that's nice."
Yeah.
I think a lot of that also really depends on the audience as well. because I think if as you're targeting more and more senior people.
Yes, that's true.
Like I went to a conference in Hawaii that was really designed for like CEOs and founders and people like that. And the food, this was the second year I'd been to it, and the food in the second year wasn't as good. And by any conventional standards at any conference you would go to, it was excellent food. But for that particular audience that are pretty discerning about what they eat, by definition, it wasn't acceptable. It was less acceptable. Like if you were to go to a typical conference with like, if you were to go to an open source summit, the food that was at the event that I was talking about would have been fine. No one would have complained. But because you've got like a small group of people who by definition are probably going to be wealthier, are probably going to be going out to nice restaurants and stuff like that. And it was kind of a quote unquote executive focus. So therefore people were elevating themselves a little bit more. The likelihood of criticizing the food was higher. So I think a lot of it really does depend on your audience. Like,
I think understanding your audience is one of those details. I think another thing that is maybe I wouldn't put in the small category, but I would say let's go with medium, is conferences that get logistics wrong, be it not understanding how people move in hallways. I don't mean the major logistical things, because obviously, as I just said, those are major. But the more minor, how rooms get filled, how rooms, entrance and exits, things of that nature. I think we've all been trapped in a hallway that was clearly not designed for the conference that it was at, and you get angry about it. And that's just, it's one of those things that sometimes just putting a rope in the middle so people stay to one side or the other, it's small things like that make a very large difference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you run into, every day again, you'll go to a conference and there are six rooms, say, and five of them all in a little cluster, and one of them is 150 yards away at the other end of a corridor, and it's just weird. I mean, some of that is, you know, the venue, what the venue provides you and so on, but just little things like you say, logistics, thinking about how people are going to go from place to place.
I'm a big fan as well of conferences that just, frankly, I mean, this is a very generic statement, but just try to mix things up a little bit. Like, we're all familiar with, you know, the keynotes in the morning and then the regular conference sessions during the day, and you break off to these different tracks. I love it when conferences try and mix that up a little bit, where they have, like, I'm seeing an increasing number of conferences putting on things like office hours, where you can go and meet somebody and ask a series of questions, or people running workshops or panels distributed throughout the event, or, you know, that kind of stuff. I just think having a broader range of content, because the big issue I have, and one of the reasons why I don't go to a lot of conference sessions is if I'm engaging in conversations and being interactive with people, my energy is going to be up. Whereas if I was to sit in, like we've all sat in meetings all day, and you just, particularly after you've eaten lunch, you can just feel that afternoon lull.
So I think from the attending sessions perspective, sessions done well are really beneficial. And I think maybe you aren't in the demographic that it's interesting to. But so we give a lot of talks at Datadog, to use a specific example. And one of them we give for about the last year or so was called Kubernetes the Hard Way. And everywhere we gave it, the room was filled to capacity where people were listening from the hallway. And in some cases, very, very large rooms. And it's because we're scaling Kubernetes further than almost anyone else. And it was a very frank talk about the problems that we ran into, how we solved them, very actionable information. And it kind of got a reputation for being a talk where if you were deploying Kubernetes or thinking of deploying Kubernetes, engineers want to be in that room because they're going to learn something from engineers that have already been through it. So I think good sessions are invaluable to a good conference, especially technical conferences. Yeah. But it's getting enough good sessions can sometimes be the challenge, because good sessions are difficult. People that are good at what they do and good at speaking and have the time to talk are at a premium. And so every room can't be full with that person. It's just a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good call, actually. I mean, it's interesting. Some of the things that make a conference good are really big picture stuff. Things exactly like that. How do you put together your suite of speakers? How do you make sure that you're reaching out to all the different areas of your community, your industry? How do you make sure that you're getting compelling speakers who are talking about compelling things and so on? And then some of them are little tiny things, like have better quality food. have your name on both sides of the badge. Honestly, just do that one thing and I'll forget about everything else. Just put people's names on both sides of the damn badge.
That's a good point.
So I think some people would prefer the agenda and Wi-Fi password and a couple other things on the back of the badge. I don't think that's a universal one.
Then you could put them on the back of the badge as well, or inside the badge or something. I don't care. Just... if half of the people in the hallway are walking around with their badge the wrong way, which they will be, and you can't tell what their name is, it's really annoying. Just put people's names on both sides. It's not that hard.
But I agree with you. I think it's way more important than putting the agenda on. Because A, the agenda changes, and B,
yes,
if somebody's badge is the wrong way around, you don't want to say to them, could you flip your badge the other way around? Because many of us are pretending that we know the fucking person that we're talking to, and we don't, okay? Because we're all bad at remembering faces.
Yeah,
so you depend on that badge.
Yeah, just put people's names on both sides of the badge. You put whatever else you like on the badge, I don't care. Just put people's names, literally, this is like the one thing. But there's a bunch of things like, you mentioned schedules there, right? This has only happened to me in a few places, but it seems to be the kind of bigger business-ier ends of them, where they go, oh yeah, the schedule, you have to download our app to get that. And it's there's obviously some company somewhere who will sell you essentially their white labeled app just branded for your conference, and presumably they're charging you $10 per attendee, or $200 overall or whatever. And
just have a good mobile experience agenda. I would agree. Everyone's looking it up on their phone these days. Have a good mobile website for the agenda.
Yeah,
because I'm not sure how well those apps work, because
I am sure how well they work.
A few conferences.
Badly. They're all bobbing.
Because
seriously,
the Google Next one was decent, and that it did a couple of things based on geolocation and other stuff, but typically they're not good.
I'd like to hear from a conference organizer who's used these a number of times to see how effective they are, because one of the elements there is, yes, you can get access to the schedule, but whatever, you can look that up on your phone from the website.
Yeah,
usually.
Just put it on the website so it's mobile friendly, and then shut up about the app.
but the other thing as well is, I think people often will want to install those apps, so just in case other attendees want to get in touch with them, right? And the one time I used it, there were clearly people who were just reaching out to a ton of people, basically spamming a ton of people for meetings.
I think the only time something like that makes sense are those giant conferences where if you have 50,000 attendees and 800 tracks going on, where it's maybe a mobile site is not the thing you want, having an app for those very specific use cases might make sense, although they still might not. But for the average conference, it absolutely doesn't, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah. So I have another question. Conference t-shirts. Yes or no?
Depends on the t-shirt.
A well-designed, well-fitting one I still take to this day, even though I have an unbelievable amount of t-shirts. I tend not to take them, though.
Yeah, same here. I mean, if it doesn't look like a conference t-shirt, I'll A, take it, and B, probably wear it.
Yeah.
But if it's just a typical black t-shirt with a screen-printed logo on the front with the dates, it's just not interesting. Like, so I just won't tend to wear it. So, like, make it look cool.
That, given your face, Eck, it appears to me that you have opinions here. So
I am the first to admit that I'm idiosyncratic in this, so I'm not pushing my particular views on anybody else. I mean, firstly, I don't wear round neck t-shirts, so I don't want a conference t-shirt. Secondly, as a conference organizer, it's a massive pain because you need 7 different sizes of them. And unless you make people declare in advance what their size are, you don't know how many to buy or anything like that. Whereas if you do socks or bags or something like that, then it's just easier logistically to do. But
you don't ever wear round neck shirts.
There's no point in me commenting on whether conference t-shirts are a good idea when I have no intention of wearing them.
But this is actually an interesting question then. So what is the best conference swag? Because I agree with you. From a logistical perspective, conference t-shirts are a pain because you've got not just the different sizes, but you also have multiple different cuts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right?
This is
so, in the old days, we'd call it men and women's t-shirt. And I think now it's, I forget what.
You quite forget the slim fit and fat guys like me and what have you. But the point is that you need a bunch of different ones, and someone's always going to be left out. And why are you putting together a plan that's going to leave some of your attendees thinking, oh, well, I wasn't catered for. I'm a bit sad about that.
Right.
Which is why I think I'm seeing a lot of places move to socks now, which I think is actually not a bad idea.
Socks have been super popular for us, although now everyone does it. Scarves have been somewhat popular.
You know, one of the best conference giveaways that one of the best conference giveaways that I've ever seen, I'm going to show you guys this, but people on the podcast are not going to obviously see it, is this. Bitnami.
I've got one of those. It's in my laptop bag.
Yeah. So to describe this for those of you listening, it's basically a cable that's got like USB, like normal USB, USB-C, micro USB, the Apple connector. So you can plug it into a normal USB socket and plug any other kind of phone or device into it and charge it. It's unbelievably helpful. It's got the Bitnami logo, which was my wife's old company, on it, and it's useful. Like, you know, yeah. I remember also getting from O'Reilly a little gang plug, you know, where you can plug two or three plugs into it, and it's like a travel version.
Ah, there's Jeremy's mine's in my laptop bag on the other side of the living room.
You know, but like actually functionally useful stuff.
A high quality battery charger, like mobile charger, is something that
external battery. I have a very lovely one of those from Microsoft, in fact.
Really? That's the specific one I was thinking of, actually.
Really? I actually find that they're overdone these days now. Everyone seems to be giving those out.
A lot of people give away cheap ones that are not good, though. They gave away, I forget if it was an Anker or an Aki, but it was one of the really nice ones, so it was appreciated.
Yeah, Anker one's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
So stuff like that, which is useful and isn't person specific.
I'm
short of a way of describing this, but I mean, it's interesting because I've seen quite a few people I know where conferences have given away sort of branded nail varnish and things like that, and
right.
Apparently that's quite cool. I don't really have an opinion on this. People like it. I think it's a great idea.
You don't wear branded nail varnish?
I do not. I'd have to stop buying my nails for that. But it's interesting, the variety of conference gifts you can do. Because you say, when someone comes up with a good idea, everyone else jumps on it. Socks was a big one. Battery chargers was another one. And those little Bitnami leads are really cool. But what else have you got that's good? I mean, one of the things I found honestly best was little notebooks with the one I had the Google logo in the front, they gave that was years ago, and it got to the end and they had a bunch left over, so I grabbed like six, and I've still got one in the inside pocket of my coat to this day, and they're just super useful, just little pocket blank paper notebooks.
Yeah, nice pens, I think, are good. Or, like, pens that have, like, I got this pen, which I'm going to show you guys, which is, this is actually from a construction firm that was a client of mine. And it's got, like, a little spirit level built into it. And it's got, like, mini screwdrivers, like eyeglasses screwdrivers built into the pen.
That's pretty cool.
Right.
Surprised you got that through TSA.
And it's, yeah. And it's a nice pen.
Actually, yeah. I am, but I was just thinking, like, a Swiss Army knife or something like that, but...
Well, if you hear about a dashing English guy murdering someone and playing with an eyeglasses screwdriver, then you know
that would be a challenge. But yeah, this kind of useful thing, stuff that goes in your laptop bag. I always think USB sticks are a good idea, as long as they're not. You know, every now and again, somebody go giving away a USB stick, and it's like 256 megabyte USB stick, and you think, thanks.
You know what people should get? You know what people should give away in this. In this era of laptops not coming with many ports on them, but you know these kind of like USB
the little
style
mini hubs
dongles where you can plug in like SD cards and they've got normal USB slots and whatever else. Those kinds of things extremely useful, relatively cheap to buy.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember getting one of those cable organizers. You know, like it's like a flat thing that you wire your cables into, so when you put it into your bag, they don't go all over the place in your bag. I remember getting one of those from opensource.com. Again, useful.
That sounds like a good idea. Rucksack. Why don't you use it? I've never seen this supposed thing that keeps your cables tidy, and I've seen your bag a number of times.
Yeah, it's actually a very good point. It's a nice idea. I don't use it. I don't know. You know why? Because I like to live a life of mystery. That's why.
Oh, really? Okay, that's the reason, is it? Fine. But yeah, that kind of useful thing, I think, is good. So we've talked about little things that make a conference good. What are things that you think conferences shouldn't do? What's an immediate, this is a bad sign for you? I mean, you know, there's the obvious ones. There's things like having product pitches disguised as talks.
You know, right.
But everybody hates that. Have you ever met anyone who thinks that's actually a good idea?
No.
No, I haven't either.
No. And I get that that's just the business that a lot of conferences operate in, right? People pay for keynotes and they pay a lot of money. Or they're, you know, top-level sponsors of the conference expect a keynote and that's part of the sponsorship. I get that that's how it works. But it isn't great content. Because I don't think there's often in many of those conferences a lot of requirements around the quality of the content. I don't think a lot of conferences will say, you can buy a keynote, but you've got to follow these guidelines in terms of it not being too product.
It has to have been good enough that we might have given you a keynote anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. In terms of the negatives, I mean, obviously, like the inverse of everything we've said so far, like, you know, poorly laid out venues are not good. Running out of coffee. But keep the coffee flowing all day. All day. You can add some chai latte.
Also, waving a tiny flag for people who don't drink the stuff. I don't mind what else you have, right? It can be, you can do tea if you want to. I mean, tea made in a urn tastes like dishwater piss, but I'll live with it. It can be water if you want. That's not a problem. Whatever.
There should be water.
Don't just do coffee
all day.
Yeah, yep. There should be water. Nothing worse than being someone you think, God, I'm thirsty, and there's nothing. So
yeah, or you've got to go and spend $7 on a bottle of water at the ridiculously overpriced conference convention center.
Welcome back to CES. So another thing that I thought of while I was prepping for this, and I can't decide what I think about this because I believe there are two schools of thought, so I'll be interested in yours. This only applies to large conferences with multiple tracks. This is not a one day one room conference thing, right? So if you've got a large conference with lots of tracks and you're interested in one particular topic, you're interested in Kubernetes, say, do you think that all the Kubernetes talks should be in one room so you can basically sit in that room for the whole day? Or do you think that you should have to follow your track around the building in order that you get up and mingle and so on?
This was, in fact, a point of discussion when we used to run the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
It was. And this is part of the reason I'm bringing it up, because I honestly don't know what I think. Because on the one hand, it's really annoying. You think, you knew I was going to... Conference organisers, you knew I was going to want to watch this talk. Why are you making me walk to the other end of the venue for each talk in the 5-minute gap? That's just really annoying. But equally, if you do just camp out in one room for the whole day, you're kind of missing out and you're inclined to tune out a bit.
It also means that if, let's say, that topic ends up being more popular than the room will hold, getting in early means you see all the talks and no one sees any of the talks, where moving them around ensures a diversity of attendees.
That's a good point.
Oh, that is a good point. So are you in general in favor of moving... Making people follow their chosen topic around the building rather than essentially having a bunch of simultaneous separate conferences under the same roof?
I think it really depends, at least from my perspective, on what the goal of the conference is, what your attendees look like, what your size is like, really would impact that decision. Because as you've now noted, there are definite pros and definite cons. So I think tailoring it to what you want your conference experience to be is important.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should have people move around, not just for the reasons that we've talked about, but I think it keeps that energy flowing. Yeah. Like, it's not just the energy of your speakers that's important, but you don't want to generate this kind of vibe where your attendees are getting tired and getting, you know, lethargic. And if you have people move between sessions, it increases the chance that first of all, they're getting the blood flowing. Secondly, they may pick up some coffee. They may meet some of the people on the way and start up another conversation while they're walking over there. Like, all of that stuff is good.
I think
you have the inconvenience of moving, but, you know,
I think for most conferences, moving is probably the correct answer. For something like FOSDEM, it wouldn't be possible and would be a nightmare. So
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Know your conference. I think the other thing to keep in mind is if you're organizing a conference, is striking the right balance with including a diverse and being addressing accessibility needs so that they don't become an issue, which I think some conferences have been really good at and some have been quite poor at.
Yeah. I agree.
I concur. I had one other question. The plastic bag you get full of leaflets, is it essentially inevitable because you need the sponsorship money? Does anyone do anything other than just throw the bag away? Or maybe put it in their suitcase and then throw away when they get home?
I am curious if there is a subset of attendees who really look forward to that bag and we just don't know about it.
I genuinely don't know.
It's...
I'm assuming they're there because they got money off the thing. But from my point of view, if I was sponsoring a conference and they said, okay, give us this much money, and in return, what you get to do is put one of your leaflets in the bag, I'd be like, no way, dude. I could just get those leaflets and set them on fire and set the money on fire. And that would be approximately the same experience.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? And I saw, who was it? I think it was Google. I saw someone posted on Twitter this week, actually, or maybe it was yesterday. Someone posted on Twitter about they had a sign up at a conference where I think it was Google was saying, we've decided to not have any swag and invest that money into diversity programs in our community.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I thought, top notch, Google. That's a great idea.
That is a good idea.
And, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Maybe you have a more reduced level of swag and you still invest that money elsewhere. But I'd like to get away from that in the same way that I'm sick of the amount of junk mail that I get. And it's bad for the environment. It's bad for, it costs, waste money and all the rest of it. So I don't know. I think we'll have that for a while, but I think everybody does the same thing. You get that bag, you put your stuff in it, and then you chuck all that crap in the bin before you leave your hotel.
This is precisely why I brought it up. I actually sat down once. I thought, I'm being unfair on the bag of leaflets. Maybe they're all really, really great. So I sat down and looked at all the leaflets and went, yeah, no, I was doing the right thing all along, and I haven't done it since. But I've put,
you know,
I've put
only
in,
you,
I believe,
only you would do that.
This is fairness. I believe I've put in the hard yards on this point, you know. shouldn't be making declarations without the data to back them up, and now I have the data to back them up, which is don't read the leaflets.
The one thing I would say as well on this is, you know, was it you I mentioned earlier on about the whole, like, the overall experience of a conference? Yeah. I'll always remember chatting to this woman who used to work at XPRIZE. Who put on a bunch of, XPRIZE knows how to put events on. They do a really, really good job of it. And it's everything from, you know, how the event is structured to how people arrive and how they're taken care of when they get there and all the rest of it. And she said, like, you know, when they leave their house, they're stepping into my world. And I want to make sure every element of this is really efficient and clear. And to me, some of the best events do that. Like, there's great signage in the venue. It's easy to go and get checked into the hotel. They may even, for larger events, have check-in points at the airport.
Just that attention to detail in general makes it.
Yeah,
money.
I mean, you've got really nice set dressing on the stages and things like that. I mean, I would point out that if you've got check-in things at the airport, you are a ginormous event. There aren't that many that do that. I don't remember us ever having a special thing at the airport for Lug Radio Live, for example.
Right. No. At Wolverhampton Airport.
It wasn't like the Seattle airport where it says Microsoft check-in, Amazon check-in, everyone else on Earth go to this small area over here.
Right. I think one of the best people in the business in the open source world doing this kind of stuff is Angela Brown, who works at the Linux Foundation. Like, I was actually talking to Erica about her last night. She would be mortified if we only highlighted her, but it's not just her, it's her team as well. But they're just that level of attention to detail. And I have a lot of respect for people who put on conferences as regularly as they do, because they are dealing with so many different venues, so many different local suppliers. In the same way that I have respect for bands who tour around, they have to deal with all of these different venues.
Yep.
and try to squeeze their rig into those different venues. It's hard work.
So organizing a conference is a lot more difficult than I would have initially, not even expected, but just would have dawned on me. Having now done large conferences, you know, at different points in my career, definitely look at them differently from the attendee slash, you know, speaking perspective.
And, you know, we go to conferences, and to your point earlier, Rick, about the jolly, even if you're there and you're having a productive time, you're having fun.
Yeah.
Whereas the poor people who are running the conference, they're running fires that are happening.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Dash there, Jeremy. And presumably, Dash was full of things that are relevant to you. How many of them did you get to see?
So as someone that was partially responsible for most of the content, it was difficult for me to sit in a session the whole time, so I bounced around to make sure that I saw each speaker.
Exactly, that's the point. You go in around and making sure things are happening and sorting stuff out and so on. And it's the same for conferences that I'm organized or been part of the organization team. You never get to see any of it. You get to the end of the 2 days, you think, that was fun, I think, and then you just go, poof, and fall over.
Yes, roughly exactly that, yes.
And then speaking purely for myself, I then spend 2 days getting my voice back, but that doesn't happen to you, so that's okay.
Every time,
I know, it's tragic.
Every time there's always the fear before Bad Voltage Live, oh God, is he going to lose it? There's the doom, and then there's Ack losing his voice.
It's the way of things.
And I'm also worried about Bad Voltage Live about, at what point do we push it too far with Alan? Because, you know,
I look forward to finding out where the line is.
We should probably dial it back a notch, I think.
So one more thing, I know we're running up on time a little bit here. One more thing I'm curious about, how much impacts your decision to attend or you think impacts other people's, since we've noted, perhaps in this regard, our opinion's not great, is location. And by that, I mean, would you go to a conference because you haven't been to a city, or does where it is impact how much you enjoy it or how likely you are to attend in any way?
Yes.
I'm assuming we leave money out of that decision.
Not really, no.
You'd go to a conference in Johannesburg, would you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Money is a consideration, right? Like, you might want to go somewhere.
This is my point. Assuming we leave money out of it, it doesn't matter how much I want to go to the conference. But if it's in Sydney and I'm paying, I'm not going. So,
for a lot of people, if you, let's say your company allows you to go to one conference per year.
Right, yeah, okay.
So you want to attend two, the location may impact. Getting more cities involved would be nice instead of... It seems like, at least in the last decade or so, there's been a kind of pattern where one city gets popular, and then I'm in Austin 18 times in a year.
Yeah, Berlin.
Right. Instead of being in Portland 18 times in a year. Right. It seems to be hopping around where I think I appreciate that part of it is that conference venues at a certain size are very difficult. And so finding one that's nice and inexpensive, especially, is appealing. But I think a little bit more diversity of cities would be nice.
It would, but there's less on the ground support there. You know, I mean, it's a snowball effect, right? As a city gets more popular, there are more venues to deal with it, but also more people who are in the city who want to do other conferences and more familiarity with the city and so on. So then people go, I'll do mine there as well. And then it's trends, right?
But I definitely think that it plays a role, but again, it depends in my mind on the type of conference. Because obviously, if you're a smaller conference, then you have more options available to you because there are more venues that you can go to. If you're running a conference of 50,000 people, you're limited. A good example again is kind of the conference that I mentioned that was in Hawaii. Most of the people at that conference were from the Bay Area, but the fact that it was in Hawaii, I think if it was in the Bay Area, they would have found other reasons not to go. But the fact that it was in Hawaii, they could roll in a trip with their families and you know, a little bit of vacation afterwards. So it became a very stated attractive reason for people to go. Like, I'm, for example, stoked that the Open Source Summit is going to be in San Diego. Love San Diego. Don't tend to go to many conferences there very often. You know, I'm not particularly interested in going to Seattle for another conference.
That's fair, actually. MWC was in Barcelona, and...
Yeah.
So I got to go to Barcelona.
Cool town.
That's
yeah.
interesting because I would have said, no, it doesn't matter to that question. And now you've come up with all those examples.
And then you thought, I really like Barcelona.
I'm now thinking, it does actually matter a bit. Yes, it does.
When we were at Canonical, going to like Budapest.
Yeah.
Like, how often do you get to go to Budapest?
What?
Like, that was... yeah.
It's how often I got to go. Then, when we went there for UDS, and it was cool, because now I've been to Budapest.
Yeah.
I'd say it certainly figures into it. If I've got two conferences, I'm thinking, which one of these should I go to? Where it is will play into that. I don't think I would go to somewhere that I otherwise probably wouldn't have done just because of where it is. But then I don't get invited to that many conferences in Hawaii. So
yeah,
right. You know,
maybe that would make the difference. You know, normally it's sort of, do I go to this one in Barcelona or this one in Berlin? At no point am I going, do I go to this one in Newcastle or this one in Tahiti? I know I'll pick the Tahiti one.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think many people would only go to a conference just because of the location.
Sure.
But if it's a conference you're already interested in, the location's maybe a sweetener, particularly if it's a location you can get to. Like for me to go to Hawaii is like you, Ak, going to Greece.
Yeah.
You know, like it's... For me to go to Greece, it's like a day and a half of travel.
Same as me coming to the States.
Right. So, cool. Well,
so on
we'd
that note,
love to hear.
I was going to just say, I would love to hear what listeners think about why you attend conferences, what you think is good about conferences, if there's any particular reason that you avoid conferences. We'd love to hear your feedback, especially, we want to hear everyone's feedback, obviously, but like I said, especially if you are more of an attendee, genuinely curious what the perspective difference is there.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. So would love to hear that. All right, chaps.
Okay, wicked.
We are done. All right, folks, have a good one. We'll hear from you on the forum, and we'll see you next time.